You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Hello and welcome to Right on 14th. My name is Mike Barr.
And I'm Christina Caramo, the one and only.
We are a podcast focused on political issues right here in the 14th Congressional District of Michigan. And we're very glad that you guys chose to listen today.
Yes, we are. Thank you for the love. It's much appreciated.
Definitely. And we couldn't support this podcast without the 14th Congressional District Republican Party. So thank you to them. You can always find them at 14cd.com. Fantastic resource for all things political in the 14th. Also, go over there to sign up to be a precinct delegate because that's super fun.
And you can follow us on Facebook, which some of you are doing now. Also, Instagram and Twitter. And you can email us at rightonfourteenth@gmail.com. And if you happen to be a candidate, please contact us and we would love to have you as a guest on the show.
Definitely. So we interviewed Mary Trotter Lang for Secretary of State a couple weeks ago. We're looking forward to having more candidates on more soon. And obviously, as we get closer and closer to November, we're going to have more and more candidates on. So look forward to that. But to the meat and potatoes of today, we got a lot of things to talk about, including Farmer Bro, union bosses, culture in America, and then also a couple recent events that have happening, like today, Wednesday, is the Children's Walkout, and then also yesterday was a big day in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
So let's kick it off. Christina, where do you want to start?
I guess so. The House Bill 5094, you were the one telling me about that.
Sure.
So what's up with that?
That's something I think that we can all get behind. So House Bill 5094 bans credit bureaus from charging security freezes. So you know how Equifax had this big issue last year where everybody's credit pretty much got riggedy-wrecked because all their information got stolen? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then all three of the credit bureaus actually benefited from this because we had to pay them in order to freeze your credit, which, by the way, if you haven't done yet, you should probably do that now. So this is a great, great thing that – pretty much says that the credit bureaus can't benefit off of their own mistakes. Seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, and this is where government regulation, if you will, goes right. You know, it's the whole point of government regulation is to protect the citizens, not to prop up or support pet projects, friends, lobbyists, and so much. So it's not that Republicans are against regulations broadly. They're just common sense ones that, again, they just protect the citizens.
Definitely. All right. What's up next? Tell me about these union bosses.
Oh, yeah. So the union boss thing. So basically I'm quoting from the Detroit News, a lot of this. So a disgraced union boss, John Hamilton. And then, too, the funny is the words they use, the adjectives they use to describe him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, this is more so verbs, but that's not the point. Bullied, extorted, and ate his way into a federal conspiracy conviction. That is so funny. Ate his way. So I guess the reason why they say that, because he spent a lot of union dollars on lavish restaurants. But it's still just funny.
Yeah.
Okay. The person, whoever wrote this, has an absolute sense of humor. Today, the once powerful labor leader finds out how long he'll spend behind bars. So he actually was sentenced today. I didn't get the particulars on how long he was sentenced for, because, well, he was supposed to be sentenced today, but I couldn't find out exactly how long. But nevertheless, the sentencing of the former head of the Engineers Local 324 caps a prolonged criminal case involving hundreds of thousands of dollars, fringe ties to former Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, which that part is interesting. So it's like, wow, Kwame Kilpatrick name is still being brought up in criminal trials.
He did a lot of bad stuff. I don't know if you know this or not.
Yeah. Well, no, that part is true. I just guess I didn't realize how deep it was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I knew it was bad. And, you know, I had heard things like one of my cousins was married to a former cop, you know. So, I mean, I heard things, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But you just, and like, man, after all this time, his name is still being brought into corruption cases. Like, it was bad. And so nevertheless, and an FBI witness with epic appetites who embezzled more than $20 million from area pension funds. And this is the thing, though, you know, with unions, we give them our money to negotiate things on our behalf. But a lot of times they're more like mobsters. I shouldn't say, I'm not saying all, of course, but I'm saying in this case, this guy was, because he was taking people's money for protection and he wasn't protecting them. He was just living a lavish life off of it.
Sure.
So the federal prosecutors portray Hamilton 63 of Riviera Beach, Florida, as a dictator who betrayed 18,000 members of the Detroit Union by heading an extortion conspiracy that made him rich. Hamilton's conviction and brand of extortion involving underlings.
I like that. It's like henchmen.
At the end, I'm going to tell you the name of the journalist who wrote this, because I'm reading this person's quote.
All right.
Just so you guys know, because this is hilarious. His underlings. I need underlings.
Okay, yeah.
I do. Forced to pay into a slush fund is unprecedented. So the sentencing Wednesday, blah, blah, blah. Moving on. The investigation grew out of another probe involving Chicago money manager John Oricchio. So I won't get into too many details about that because I kind of said enough. But this was also an individual in Chicago who was doing the same type of thing. So they were just like, I guess, a little thing going. So they were like taking private jets, had girlfriends, and, you know, it's just a typical, it's like a mob thing. It was strippers, expensive jewelry and clothes, traveling, the whole thing, and extorting innocent, hardworking Americans who they were supposed to be protecting. That's the gist of it. So
union's not always in our best interest is what I'm taking out of this. I don't know. What are you taking out of this?
Yeah, and you just got, it's about oversight, you know, and just this, I mean, it's just human nature.
Yeah.
Some people are opportunists. It's just how far do we take our opportunistic nature?
Definitely.
Do we take it to harm others and better ourselves in the process, or do we try to just better ourselves without harming others?
Mm.
And that's what it kind of boils down to. So what about the farmer bro?
Oh, farmer bro. This is one of my favorite individuals. A lot of you will remember from last year is that he hiked up some drugs by up to like 56-fold and made just oodles and oodles of money on some patents that he bought. So he bought some patents for drugs. He took those drugs that were fairly affordable and jacked up the price. Like this drug, for example, it's called Daraprim, and raised its price by a factor of 56 from $13 to over $750 per pill. So this is straight up extortion. A lot of people looked at this and said, what a jerk. And now actually he got sentenced to 7 years in prison and has to pay back $7.4 million. So he's rumored to have been crying during his sentencing, which I'm just not sad about at all.
No.
You know, if you're going to extort people that are sick and have no other way out of their sickness but buy a really, really, really expensive drug now, then, yeah, forget you.
Yeah. No, okay, Mike, I have a question and a comment.
All right.
My question is, why is his name Farmer Bro?
If you have seen this guy, he looks like a total bro.
Okay.
He's super pasty, but has this, like, fancy haircut. And you can just see him sitting on the front porch of some, like, Greek fraternity in some Ivy League college, smoking cigars and being like, oh, yes, my father, the senator, says this. And, oh, yes, the poor, poor people. Yes, I extorted them out of millions of dollars this year while I was on my yacht. He seems like a bro. And so they just combined bro and pharma from the industry that he's in. And he got the nickname, Farmer Bro.
In case you were wondering, now you know.
Now you know.
Now, my other comment was about this is I was watching American Greed. I think it comes on MSNBC. CNBC.
Yeah.
CNBC. It's really, really interesting. And the reason why this made me think about it was talking about the opioid addiction, which may be something we could talk about next week or something. But
yeah.
Basically, like these doctors in Alabama, they were just overly prescribing, you know, people, the opioids, people who didn't even need it. In fact, one lady, they lied to the insurance company and said she had cancer.
Nice.
So they could prescribe her.
I mean, that's not just an Alabama thing. That's throughout the nation. The lying, but the overprescribing of opioids.
Well, that part. Well, the reason why this particular doctor's office, because they bought a pharmacy. So they could control, give it
nice.
To them. And then, like, this one particular drug that was supposed to be only for end of life,
yeah.
like hospice care,
yeah.
they bought, like, a majority. They bought, like, a stake in the company. So, like, if they bought a stake in the company, then on top of it all, you're the main distributor.
Wow.
Which causes the price, the stock to go up. So you're making money because the stock price go up, but you're also making money because you're the number one distributor of
That's
the
impressive.
Product.
I got to applaud him for, like, that's a horrible thing to do.
And
but
and then this is the crazy part. Not only that, the doctor was never there.
Yeah.
And so they had basically nurse practitioners there who were running the clinic. The nurse practitioners were also addicted.
Wow.
The one doctor was addicted. The nurse practitioners were addicted. And some of the one patient, she went and said, something is wrong. Like, I need help. And the woman had never even drank alcohol in her life. You know, a married lady with kids, a clean life. She had never even drank alcohol in her life. Obviously, if you never drank alcohol, of course she never did drugs. And now she's completely addicted because she didn't know it was a pain clinic.
Interesting.
So she went to the pain clinic just to get some help. And before you know it, she's addicted and on the floor. She said it was so bad one night. She had like a heating pad on.
Yeah.
Her daughters walked in the room and was like, Mom, you're smoking. And she, her whole breasts were burnt up. She didn't even feel it. That's how doped up she was. Because they were prescribing. Then the people didn't even know what they were really taking. That's why I'm suspicious of doctors. That's
so,
why.
Because, I mean, opioids are bad, definitely. And they're getting overprescribed for sure.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a throughout the country thing that we definitely need to fix.
But this story was unique.
Yeah, especially bad.
Yeah, well, the one guy connected to it, he was like a billionaire and he just like went to prison recently. Like, when I say recently, I mean with like in the last 6 months. Anyways, yeah. We can move on. That's a different day topic. It was interesting, but.
All right. So next up on today's agenda is the culture collapse. Is the religious right right or are they paranoid? And I got to kick this off by saying I was extremely skeptical. But I got to say, there's a pretty legit argument here. So where are we at? Kick us off.
Okay. So as Mike knows, I probably am a Christian and I probably identify as an evangelical Christian especially. So I'm a little bit to the – not a little bit.
Solidly. You
know, yeah, I'm far out there as far as my worldview. But, you know, we often – our characters – people can make characters of each other. Characters are made of us that we're all like stiff-necked and super judgmental, which some people are, but that isn't doctrinal. But I won't get into doctrine. That's not what we're talking about. So the whole point I was trying to make was, is the religious right correct about the moral collapse in our country? Now, people are not perfect, but we will always do things. This is just what we do. But the thing about it is, it's one thing for people to have issues, but when we as a society embrace certain things, it causes a further collapse. So kind of what got me thinking about this, well, I'll get into later. We're skeptical of some things, but we'll talk about that later. So first, what is culture? Just so we're clear, a lot of people don't think about this, but culture is how we communicate with the world around us. And that includes the sense of right and wrong. So basically how we interact and communicate with the world around us, whether it's through art, through food, through music, through politics, media, and just however you communicate with your world, basically is culture. All right. So part of this was on Wayne State's campus. They had a group called InterVarsity. Okay, so it's a Christian student group. I found this on MLive, by the way, and this happened recently. This article actually was published yesterday.
Okay.
So a Christian student group was allowed back on campus of Wayne State University last week, just 2 days after it brought a federal lawsuit against the university. So that was quick.
All right.
So while InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, which has had a presence on campus for 75 years, should never have been barred, at least Wayne State officials backed down. So basically, the issue Wayne State had was they said in order to be a member, you had to live by Christian principles. Now, the thing about it is, love us or hate us, like, listen, we got a worldview. You don't have to agree with it. We're not forcing other people. We're just, our whole point is this is the way we see the world. We see the world should be lived. That's a big difference from imposing and saying you must live this way. That isn't our premise. We're just saying this is the way we believe people should live. So their saying is that if you're part of our group, you have to live by biblical principles. That's not ridiculous. It's a Christian group. So Wayne State was looking to ban them on campus. And not only that, they had them pay all these fees, which isn't fair while they were off of campus, you know. So luckily, when they filed the lawsuit, they were able to get back onto campus. So, you know, so now it's – but I think they have to pay the bill before they can hold Bible study again. So, you know, it's like – you know, so that –
So let me get this right, that they kicked them off campus for practicing faith and – Well, that's it? Like, there's no way that's it, the whole story.
No, that is – it's not about practicing their faith. They were requiring members to follow doctrine of how they live their lives.
Okay, so this kind of ties into what we talked about last week of, like, exclusivity of clubs. And if you willingly join a club and – yeah, sure, you have to meet its criteria, right? Like, you're not going to ban the rowing team because you have to row to be on the rowing team, right? So – That seems a little crazy.
It is very crazy, and that's what we're talking about. And this kind of goes into the theme of a lot of, even with the school walkout, which I don't want to get ahead of myself because I will do that.
We'll get there.
Yeah, so, but that's kind of what it is. Like, the students have a right to assembly, you know, and a lot of times people downplay when Christians say, like, listen, we're being marginalized. And sometimes people say, well, yeah, you know, America is a majority Christian country, but even a lot of people who are Christian aren't really, how do I say this in a delicate way? Even a lot of people who say they're Christian, they're not really serious about the faith. Some of us are serious. And that's with any group. You know what I'm saying? Some people are more serious than others. So some people, even believers, are like, oh, you guys just practice in the corner. And we're like, no, we want to practice our faith boldly and publicly. So this is kind of what this is about. And also, another interesting thing was another article that came out was about the transgender bathroom thing, which a group of Christians in Grand Rapids filed a lawsuit. Williamston Community Schools says a lawsuit challenging gender identity provisions of its anti-bullying policy designated to protect gay and transgender students should be dismissed. So that's kind of what's going on. So it's kind of like this idea that, I mean, I don't know what percentage of population is actually transgender, maybe like 0.05. It's a very small number. I mean, most of us don't even know a transgender person. So the thing about it is that kids can go to the bathroom based on their gender identity, which to me is not fair to other students because I have two daughters. I don't think it would be fair for my daughter to have to use change clothes with a boy because it's still anatomically male. You know, and now if you have a situation where there's a student who, say, they actually went through the gender reassignment surgery, which I think is insane, but you have a 16-year-old boy who's totally went through the reassignment surgery, I think it will be slightly cruel to make him go change with the boys. I get that. But as long as you're anatomically male, you need to go with the boys. And what's interesting is another article leading up to this, it was a person who was talking about, like, my 7-year-old is trans. Like, this. Like, what the heck? How are you trans at 7? I don't know, Mike. I'm rambling. What are your thoughts?
No, so I think this is very valid, right? And a lot of people are upset about transgender bathrooms and the whole bathroom debate in schools and public spaces especially. So I was just looking up the numbers because I'm curious myself. It looks like, at least according to the Williams Institute, about 0.3% of the United States population is transgender is what they estimate. So out of the whole of America, it's about 900,000 people is – yeah, 900,000 people. That math works. Anyways, I get it that a lot of people are uncomfortable with men and women's bathrooms and women and men's bathrooms from their perspective, right? And I kind of agree to that perspective, is that if you look like a man and you're, you know, 6 foot tall and muscular and walking into a woman's restroom, I would be afraid if I was a woman, you know, and that's not to say that all women are, and that's not to say that we should inhibit that person's right.
Okay, I didn't want to cut you off.
No, I'm still trying to process here because I think there is a good argument for letting people be comfortable, but I think there's also a legit argument for letting people be safe also. And I think that there is a strong... how do I want to word this? There is extra risk for letting men and women be in places, secluded places, like specifically secluded places like bathroom stalls, that lends itself to predator-prey situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that that's overall healthy for either gender.
No.
But I understand that people that have sexual dysmorphia or whatever you want to call it.
It's definitely a disorder. Yeah, you know, look, Mike, if I looked at you right now and said, Mike, yeah, I am a 65-year-old Korean man, you wouldn't look at me and say, oh, Christina, wonderful, I affirm. You would be like, Christina, right, what's going on? Do you need some help?
Right.
Have you been taking drugs?
Yes.
You know, because the people who are against this, their premise was, listen, like you said, it's a very small number of the population. So what they should do is let that child use the, like, teacher's bathroom. So nobody's saying, if you have a kid, which I think is completely insane, it's worth noting that the 7-year-old, their parent is also trans. So, I mean, at 7 years old, like, when I was 7, I didn't understand gender and sexuality. I just... I didn't even think about it. It wasn't even in my brain. But see, when we keep teaching kids something, eventually it becomes in their brain. And this is the problem, because you want to change national policy and the national discussion and teach kids different beliefs, saying that gender and sex are separate. Gender and sex are not separate. Gender and sex are one and the same. And teaching kids that is going to cause confusion. Because I had a student, I think I told you this, last year, who stood up and gave a speech, and she said she didn't know her gender. 2 years ago, that would have never happened. But when you're on the internet and you're hearing this and you're constantly hearing this, you know, oh, well, maybe I am gender fluid. Like when I was a tomboy. I never considered myself really a boy, but I prefer sports. When I was even in elementary school, I just preferred to hang out with guys. I didn't see myself as a homosexual. I didn't see myself as a boy. I just liked sports. And that was just the boys like sports and I like sports.
Well, I think so that's because we as a society have too rigid of a idea of what it is to be a man. You can be a woman and like sports. Mm-hmm. You can be a guy and like cooking. Like, these things are not inherently tied to your sexuality or your gender. Mm-hmm. It's just part of who you are.
Right. And the thing about it is that when we start to change the whole paradigm, I guess, if you will, of how we should look at gender and then teaching that to children, that is that's where the problem lies. It's not, look, if a parent says, you know what, I let my son wear dresses, I don't think the school should attack or mistreat or nobody should bother. That's not at all. The person should be treated with dignity and respect. If I, as a teacher, had a boy, actually, one of the schools I went to, there was a trans kid, but the kid wasn't in my class. I will call that child by whatever name they identify as. I'm not going to try to make a point or a statement and humiliate them. That's nobody's saying. But to create this space, like you mentioned, people, I think, sometimes don't think of the law of unintended consequences. And I don't think people pushing this cannot be this naive.
Yeah.
Because there's not even like you have to get like a sign off from a doctor and a psychiatrist. Like there's checks. There's no checks and balances. It's not like, okay, once there's approval from a psychiatrist, once there's approval from a doctor that this is actually something you're committed to and doing, this is what we allow you to do. No, you might could just walk in with a wig on just like I'm a girl. It's no type of checks and balances. So to be honest, you can't see or conceive a 16-year-old boy exploiting this situation.
Yeah.
You know, and saying, oh, really? I can go in a girl's bathroom. I can just say I'm a girl. I mean, it's too much. And I think it's unhealthy for our children. It's confusing. Like a case out in California, I think it was California, where a teacher was talking about this. And basically, long story short, the kids were in kindergarten. They came home crying, like, am I going to turn into a girl? What? Why? Yeah.
So I think it lends itself, and this is kind of an alley-oop into the next subject, is the left continues to push this agenda, right? And a couple of years ago, it was to normalize gays, and gays are now normalized. And now it's to normalize transgender people, and transgender people are becoming more normalized. What's it going to be next? Is it going to be transracial people? There's the
– Rachel Dunville.
Yeah, and Sean King. Exactly it. And so there's this white woman who was a – who thought she was a black woman or wanted to masquerade as a black woman.
She still
was the
does.
Leader of – what was she the leader of?
She was in NAACP.
She was – yeah, like the local leader of an NT
– NAACP.
NAACP chapter, which is, I think, what a lot of us would call as ridiculous. And today we can say that, but 5 years from now, it might be totally taboo to say that somebody who's transracial is ridiculous. And so at what point does it stop? And your next subject lends itself super well to this because it's that to the extreme, I feel like.
Even before I get to that one.
Okay.
But it was interesting, Camilla Page, which you would consider a classic liberal. You know what I'm saying? She really is like a classic liberal. But her point was that this is a sign of the collapse of our culture. You know, again, it, if you just reference back the number you gave about roughly how many people there are, again, those people should be treated. When I was in college, I had a transgender teacher.
Yep.
That person, they should be treated with dignity and respect and call them by whatever name they call themselves. Don't harass them. Nobody is saying that. But there's a big difference between treating a person like with dignity and respect because they're a human being and then telling the rest of America, this is what you must believe or you're evil.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So her point was that this is a sign of collapse because we're so obsessed with sex as a society. We just so obsessed and gender roles are important. You know what I'm saying? Gender roles are healthy. It creates a balance. You know what I'm saying? Men and women are hardwired differently. Their brains are different. Remember the video where the biologist was talking about, she's like, women's brains are hardwired different. Their bodies are different. And the people stood up and was like, you're a fascist. Yeah. So her point was, this is a sign of cultural collapse, because as we know, things don't get any different. That, as you say, it keeps going and going and going and going to the point where there's like no gender lines.
Progress.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
It's progressive, right?
And how does this benefit society? How does this benefit society if me and Mike decide we're going to mutilate our bodies and live as the other gender? This is absolutely no, like, the male-female balance benefits society because it creates family. Human beings are the greatest asset to a society. So if we go lopping off our body parts, this does not help society in any way. And all it does is confuses people, especially the next generation. So speaking of this, when I went to Teen Vogue, which Teen Vogue is just weird. Okay. When I went to their website, now Teen Vogue, their demographic is between 12 to 16. Okay. And on their website, they talk a lot about gender and sexuality. Now, I am of a believer that sex ed should be primarily taught at home. And the reason why I say that is not so much because kids don't need to know it, because it's something important. If you don't tell them, their friends will, of course. But it's like, how is it being taught? That is more so. It's not so much that I'm against sex education. It's how is it being taught? So if you're just telling kids the basics of certain things, that's okay. I mean, especially like in biology classes, biology. But if you're starting to advocate transgenderism and all other things, see, that's where it becomes a problem. So like Teen Vogue, when you go to their wellness section, now keep in mind their target audience is between 12 and 16. When you click wellness, you think you're talking about, you know, taking care of your body, you know, being healthy. No, it's about transgenderism and gender identity. Why? Why does a 12-year-old need to know about transgender?
It's what they're normalizing.
And that's kind of back to the topic, is the religious right right? Are we correct in that this is a problem and it's going to destroy our society because people get so, the way the human brain responds to sex, they just so ingrained in it and it just begins to shift our focus to a certain extent, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think we've proven that transgenderism is inherently bad, you know? Like, yes, it's definitely something that the left is pushing, but is it inherently bad?
I think so.
Yeah?
I think it's horrible. I do not. I think it's bad. I think it's unhealthy for the person. I mean, I'm sure you may disagree with me. I think it's absolutely terrible. It's not good for society. And you got to keep in mind, I come from the premise as a Christian. So yeah. I look at it from a spiritual aspect, too.
Right.
So that must be said, not just as a society, but from a spiritual aspect, I think it's unhealthy. But that isn't the point of our show, so
right.
I'll leave it there. But I still think it's not good for a person because that's not who you are. That must be miserable. I think it should be treated like a mental illness, not something that we should affirm as a society. And to kind of go into, again, our premise is the religious right, right? Teen Vogue, it was an article they published like 6 months ago teaching kids how to have anal sex. Again, this is not, remember, their target audience is 12 to 16. Why are kids being sexualized? Like, why does a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old need to know how to have anal sex? And then on top of it, what irritated me was they were teaching the kids like it's completely normal and safe. No, it's not. It's actually extremely harmful to the body. So if something is harmful to the body, then it's not safe and normal. And so, but that's not even the point. That's irrelevant because why are we telling this to kids?
I mean, kids are always going to have sex though, right?
I don't necessarily agree with that.
No? You don't think that kids have been having sex?
I think it's gotten worse.
As long as there have been kids, I feel like kids have been having sex.
Well, I mean,
and I'm not talking about like 9, 10, but I'm talking about like, yeah, the 15-year-olds that are reading Vogue. Yeah, they're probably having some fun with their boyfriend, girlfriend after school.
Well, I think it's worse than it used to be, but that's a whole different cultural thing because before you had the family structures were different. You had more intact families at one time. Your daughter wasn't hanging out over her boyfriend's house. Like, you know, this wasn't going on all the time. You know, it was more parental supervision.
Sure.
People didn't have this kind of like, I don't know if this is, I don't want to use the wrong term, but like I remember one high school I went to, my students were like, yeah, our parents let us have hotel parties. Like, what? And they were ninth graders. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Now, see, that's excessive.
Yeah, but this
I
is
feel
what,
like.
But this is why they're having sex. It's no longer, okay, I climbed out my window and snuck. No. The parents are facilitating situations because a lot of parents feel like my kid's going to do it anyway. So I'd rather them do it under my roof than do it in the street. But that's a stupid way to think. I had two of my classmates when we were in high school. Their mothers used to let their boyfriends spend a night over to the house. And we were in high school. I would never forget this. And I said, I'm like, guys, that's really, really stupid. You're going to get pregnant. Everybody isn't like that. I'm like, yes, everybody is, because we're human. Just like you want to eat food, you want to have sex. And both of them had children before we graduated from high school. In fact, one of them had two. So, I mean, kids are having to get more and more and more. But it's not because kids have always been doing it. People have been doing all kinds of things. It's because we as a society are normalizing it. Whenever we as a society and the culture normalize something, you're going to get more of it.
I think that's true. But I also think that kids have always been getting it on since as long as there's been kids. And you're never going to stop it. And how this ties back into the schools is that not all parents are going to teach their kids things like sex ed, and not all parents are going to give their kids the whole message. I think it's important. Let's pretend, for example, that mm-hmm. you have a super conservative family and they don't believe in contraception. I think it's unfair to impose upon that child their parents' dogma, essentially. So if their son wants to use a condom but doesn't know how to use a condom because their parents view that as against their religion, the child, the kid, the 15-year-old boy in this case, shouldn't suffer because his parents believe one thing over another thing. And that's why I think it's important in schools especially to teach kids about sex ed.
But the thing about it, but sex isn't something you need to have. Like, I mean, the thing about it, I think that our view on sex is wrong as a society.
Are you saying abstinence? Are you trying to argue for abstinence?
Absolutely. But for a 15-year-old? But listen, the whole point of sex is to make children. The fun is secondary. It's just like food. We eat food to live. It's pleasurable, so we'll do it. If food tastes like rocks, everybody would be like 100 pounds. Am I right? So yeah. There's spices, there's cinnamon and cloves and nutmeg and cilantro to make food tasty. So sex is fun, so we'll do it. So it's not a need for that kid to have the condom. I know Mike is like dying laughing right now.
I am dying laughing. I just love the analogy of like
food. It's perfect. Am I wrong?
No, this is it's a pretty good analogy.
It is. So the reason why it's fun, so we'll do it because survival is the ultimate thing humans strive for, and sex is essential to our survival. If otherwise die, I mean, do you think 500 years ago they had sex ed? I'm sure they figured it out.
Well, that's what I'm saying is the kids are always going to do it.
No, it's not kids. We're talking about adults who are ready to start a family, not 15-year-olds who just want to screw around.
No, there's a reason that all the Judaic religions of the world have in their books, their holy writs, is to, you know, keep your women at home. Because you know why? Because the men are always going to be out wandering.
No, it ain't about keeping
looking
your
to pick
women
up women.
No, it's not about keeping your women at home.
Keep them covered?
Keep them. That's not that. First of all, you have to look at stuff in context. Then we get in the doctorate, and we'll go way off topic. But you have to keep stuff in context, in time, and understand Old, New Testament, rightly dividing the word. Like you have some Christians, like women who don't wear pants and don't wear earrings. I mean, don't wear pants. They don't wear earrings.
Right.
They don't wear makeup. Like to me, I don't believe in that. That's not doctrine at all. I wear pants. I wear earrings. I wear makeup. I mean, I have tattoos. But this, again, we want to make sure that we stay on it. But the point I'm making is the 15-year-old doesn't need that. And what about parents' rights? If I don't want my kid learning something because he doesn't have to do it. It's not necessary.
They're going to do it.
You can't
abstinence only doesn't work. It's never worked.
It worked for a long time up until like the 70s and 80s. Kids did not have sex illicit. Look at the out of wedlock birth rates and the teenage pregnancy rates. There was no sex ed. Abstinence was the message. Whenever something is shamed in society, people are less likely to do it. So when we were taught to be abstinent, then people were more likely to have a girl. I'm coming from the premise of a woman.
Sure.
She was more likely to have sex with a guy she really loved. If she was going to do this, she's like, okay, I really, really love him versus some guy I met at the bar Friday night. So that's why you got all this random culture. But this is a whole other subject. So we're trying to stay on kids being sexualized. Because I know I can go into a whole different topic. So any rate, the Teen Vogue teaching kids this is strange. So our whole point, again, is the religious right. Right. Is it morphing and getting out of control? So here we were. We cross into the realm of far more bizarre. So the first thing are these people that are called ecosexuals. So they're a form of environmentalists who feel like if we want to save the planet, we make love to the planet. Now, just so you guys know, at University of California, San Diego, our tax dollars, for my people, you guys know I'm not going to like this, our tax dollars went to fund this project where this woman and her lover and her dog went to the forest and the women performed sex acts with plants. Now, I think it's sick and strange, okay, but why are our tax dollars going to fund this? Why are our tax dollars going to fund this? This woman's a professor. She's a professor at the college, okay? And Nevertheless, this is something that's a growing trend. Vice did a documentary about it. Here I go back to Teen Vogue, dashing them because I think they're just sick. Teen Vogue, again, remember their target audience is 12 to 16, did a bit about ecosexuals. Why does a 12-year-old need to know about people who want to have perform sex acts with plants and trees and other types of...
For the record, I was extremely skeptical that this was a real thing, and I looked it up, and I got to say that... Real websites, unfortunately, like Vice, are reporting that this is a thing. And so while it might sound ridiculous, it's apparently true. And I guess that's why I'm weirded out about
it. But the thing about it is that these ladies, the woman who's the college professor who did this, she's a college professor. Her website is .edu. Her website is .edu. Why? And... I've been working on my cursing. Let me stop. So this is not like me. I'm not nuts. Like, this stuff is really happening. It gets worse. In Canada, which, you know, whatever they got going on, Canada, they legalize certain sex acts with animals. Now, I know some of you are like, why are they talking about this?
All right. So now hold on. Because I looked up the
snopes.
I said some.
I'm qualifying. Right. Go ahead, Mike. So how this came about, I remember reading about this a couple of years ago. A year or two ago, that's irrelevant. But this man was sexually abusing his stepdaughter, and he was making her perform sex acts with the family dog. When he went to trial, he contested the bestiality charge, saying that the animal wasn't being penetrated, so it wasn't considered bestiality. The courts agreed with him, and I think it was like 6-1. Like, what is wrong with you people? Like, that is so sick. And so in Canada, and this is beyond left, because even most liberals, I would say a very small percentage of the population is strange. However, it's happening, though. Like, why would 6-1 say, oh, yeah, well, the current definition of bestiality, yeah, he has a point. 6-1 voting in favor. So in Canada, of course, animal rights groups are going crazy. Like, animals will start being abused. Like, this is just so sick. And this actually happened. So back to the question, is the religious right right? That something is seriously sick with our culture.
Well, I think what's easier to prove here is that the left is pushing a narrative to normalize things. It was to normalize gays, then it was to normalize transgenders. And you think, oh, you know, it could be nothing more than that. And with this sort of stuff, we see that it's not going to stop at transgenderism. It's going to go into what almost everybody can agree on is crazy things like bestiality.
And it gets worse.
And so, I hate myself for saying that, by the way, because I'm listening to myself right now and thinking, this is what a crazy person would say this. But it's true. And that's the worst part about that is that the Supreme Court of Canada ruled that it's not bestiality if there's no penetration. And people are getting away with this. And this is the way that society's going. And I do feel like that's tearing apart at the fabric of society.
It is. It makes people like the thing about it is that, you know, and I'm not, like I said, I'm not pride. That's a horrible thing to say, but I'm very proud of my faith. But I also am very open to interacting and befriending and talking to people who of different religions who don't believe in religion. I'm completely open to all of that. But it was interesting. This guy, actually a Canadian, I think his name is Stephen Moyadu or something. He's a Canadian dude. He's an atheist. But he had a really interesting point. He said that atheists want to rip the roof off the church but didn't replace it with anything. That whether you would agree with religion or not, it did provide a sense of balance or a sense of structure. Like when you fear something greater than yourself and you live for something bigger than just you and your finite existence, then it does make you feel differently. And then some people, and I'm not saying that.
I'll disagree with that vehemently, by the way.
Okay, fair point. I'm not saying if people don't believe that they all of a sudden would go all the way to this. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
But for those who do have those demons, they don't get to that point. And I think that sometimes when we put no restraints on people, like we all think crazy stuff. All of us have had crazy thoughts, but you don't entertain them. So if something crazy going in your head, it's just like, oh, my God, that's disgusting. It goes out your mind.
Yep.
But if you are living in a society where anything goes, you will entertain them to the point it's no longer entertaining. And if you entertain something long enough, now you're going to want to do it. You know, like Salon.com had an article called Sympathy for a Pedophile, where this guy was talking about how he was molested as a child and how he had pedophile fantasies and things of that nature. Like, again, we're normalizing weirder stuff. So, but you disagreed with one of my, did you want to address that or no?
No, I think that's a whole conversation for a separate day.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. So it gets worse. And so, you know, the movie The Shape of Water came out. So I did not think anything of it. You know, I just.
Have you seen it?
I have not seen the film.
Okay. I haven't either. So it's two people talking about a movie that neither of us have seen.
Yes, that's a fair point.
All right.
So, you know, I heard people make jokes about the movie because woman in the movie has a romantic relationship with some type of sea monster.
Okay.
And so, you know, what made me disgusted, I know, right? You got it right. So I saw an article, and again, remember, audience, the premise of this segment is the religious right, right? Keep this in perspective. So the Huffington Post had an article, and me and Mike were debating on whether or not it was satirical or not, but it appears to be very legit. The article is from the Huffington Post. That's not the part. The man who they interview, who apparently claims he had a sexual relationship with a dolphin. He claims he had a sexual relationship with a dolphin, and the man wrote a memoir about it. And apparently they got a movie review from him about it. So it was kind of like, okay, what's going on? So it was like, that's a little bit strange. But then the other day when I Googled the name of the film, it were other articles that populated that were discussing this, like, oh, it's okay if you like the movie, da 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 da. Here are some history of humans and marine life. And some people were saying, like, oh, people were trying to say the movie is advocating bestiality and it's not. What about Beauty and the Beast? What about The Little Mermaid? These are other films that show interspecies relationships. And I'm like, that's insane. First of all, Beauty and the Beast, when I was a little girl, we already knew it was a man. We just knew it was a curse on him to make him look ugly. Like, I never thought, like, this is a different creature.
I mean, he was a different creature, though.
But you knew from the beginning of the movie that he was a human being and he had a curse on him to look like a monster. And then somebody would have to love him for him to no longer look like the monster. So you already knew it was a person. But he looked like a monster, but he was still a person.
Monster.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
All right.
But again, I still think, you know, and you might even argue that I'm reaching a bit, but I still feel like this is a problem. And considering all the other things that we kind of led up to this point, you know, that is the religious right, right? Is our society really collapsing in front of us? Or is it just people just like, we're just doing whatever, you know?
I mean, I think we can definitely confirm it's going further and further left all the time. Like, women are now allowed to vote.
Oh my God, Mike! Why would you even mention that? That's not even a good. I'm sorry.
How I look at this is through the lens of progressivism.
Mm-mm-mm.
And if you went back to 1900 and say what's progressive, they would say like letting women vote. That would be progressive.
I don't think that's progressive. I think that's common sense.
I agree that it's now common sense, but let's go 100 years into the future from today and say, you know, what was progressive in the year 2000. Transgenderism was progressive. And so my argument here
5 years ago.
I mean, still. But if it's 2100, transgenderism is probably not going to be progressive anymore because it's going to be old hat. Just like women voting today is not progressive, but it was in 1900. And so my argument here is that society continues to, capital P, progress throughout history.
Well, okay.
And so the religious right is not necessarily right, but they are continuously losing ground.
Well, see, and this is maybe I'm being petty. See, what do you define conservative and progressive? See, that is like why is marginalizing women considered conservative? And I'm not saying that's what you're necessarily saying.
Right.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth by any means, but I just take issue with, and I know that's a common notion that it's considered progressive to let women vote.
Yes.
When I don't think it's progressive, I think it's simply common sense. And
that's my point, is that it's normal now. It's been normalized because the left of the year 1900, the suffragettes movement, normalized women voting.
But to me, I guess
And so who's to say that the same thing's not happening now?
But I guess the reason why is because, for one, women voting was beneficial to society. And I don't think that is like a conservative progressive issue. That's just a common sense issue. And I get
the people
your
of 1900 would not agree with that, though.
Well, they were wrong about a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, okay. Who's to say we're not wrong about transgenderism?
Because it's destroying society. Okay, I'll tell you why we're wrong. How does it benefit human survival?
Women voting doesn't benefit human survival either.
Actually, it does.
I mean, I agree that it's a good thing. Don't let the listeners...
No, I know what you mean.
Okay.
But it does benefit human survival. Because, for one, when women are educated, it increases the quality of society. The condition of the women do increase the quality of society because women typically are the ones who take care of and raise the children. So the more educated the women are, the more educated the children will be as a whole. So Definitely. It does benefit society.
Okay.
But transgenderism actually goes against the survival of the human race, so therefore it is detrimental.
Well, I don't know that that's true at all.
Why?
There are a lot of things against it that don't help the human race be more healthy, like McDonald's, for example, that we keep around.
And it's still bad. I don't eat McDonald's.
Okay, so maybe it's a bad example.
No, it is anything that's counterproductive to the survival of the human race, we should not do or encourage.
Okay.
It goes even we're going to go way off field. You know what? I was going to get to a whole thing about evolutionary science. Is it a form of natural population control?
Hold on. I got one question for you. My friends and I were debating this the other day.
Is it a form of natural population control? Okay, go ahead.
It seems like a really simple question, but every person I've asked so far has a different answer.
Okay.
When did Darwinism end for the human race?
When did Darwinism end for the human race?
Yeah.
I don't believe
or
in
natural selection.
I don't believe in natural selection at all. Well, oh. I shouldn't say. I shouldn't. Let me say.
Really?
I believe.
That's different answer.
Yeah. No. For one, I don't believe in evolution.
Okay.
I believe they're separate. I think, for example, even if the distinction in human populations, I just think that when you have a group of people, eventually over time, they will have the same characteristics based on who made it and who survived.
Okay.
That's different. But I don't believe in a concept of small micro changes over a period of time.
Really?
I don't believe in evolution. I think it's completely bogus. I think it is complete lunacy and crap.
We could have a whole show. We should
have a debate on evolution.
On evolution.
I believe in intelligent design.
And I do not.
And this will be great. But me and Mike have went off topic, but this will be interesting. Yes,
Next week on Right on 14, debate of the century.
Mike, it would be a showdown. We could sell tickets.
Sell tickets, yeah. I'll get Stephen Hawking on the show to talk about. Is it too soon?
Too soon.
For the record, Stephen Hawking, fantastic scientist, died early this morning, unfortunately. So
yeah, that's definitely sad.
Yeah,
that's for sure. But no, I completely believe in intelligent design. God made everything, and I can back. It's not that I can back it. Let me not sound prideful. There's plenty of science to back up that there's an intelligent creator. Tons of it.
That is a debate for another day.
It is so sad how evolution got could put into our academia. But anyway, to wrap up this segment of Is the Religious Right Right, I will concede that Mike believes that we have a point on certain issues. I don't know. I'll let you speak for yourself. No, I'm not going to speak for you.
I guess my argument of this is that we haven't conclusively and we cannot objectively prove that the religious right is right and the left is wrong. But the statement that I would say that is very apparent throughout history is that society as a whole has, capital P, progressed continuously.
To us, in certain issues, we've gotten better. In certain issues, we went backwards. I will say about the religious right is that I do want to throw this sidebar, which I even put in the show notes as a sidebar because it's part of the topic, but it's off topic. See, I put a dash mark, interesting sidebar. It coincides with the increase in archaic paganism. But it's funny that is the religious right, we get laughed at sometimes, like me believing in intelligent design.
Yes.
Okay. And I know it seems laughable because we've been taught that evolution is settled science when it's called a theory. But at any rate, it's not a law.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. It's so tempting to throw the other half of the show and say, forget this.
We can't. Okay. We got 10 minutes. We can't.
Mike is turning red. Okay, but I did want to point this out that typically we get laughed at about how the belief in God is silly and, oh my God, it's just how humans found a way to understand the world around them because they couldn't understand it. So the only way they could is by believing in a God, which I found was really interesting. It was Vogue, regular Vogue. I'm just giving Vogue a hard time today. But Mike is giving me this look. I found it really interesting. They had this article last year that was about summer solstice and how the witches were coming together to celebrate summer solstice, which I find it interesting is that as you see a decline in Christianity, you see a rise in archaic paganism. Yes, you do. You've never heard of people smudging sticks and carrying rocks? Mike, why? You've never heard of that?
I don't think there's any credence to paganism. Like, yes, maybe there are pagans out there, just like there are Pastafarians out there, and just like there are, what other, Satanists? Mm-hmm. There are definitely very small religious sects that believe
it's on
strange things. It's things on, that seem strange to the rest of us.
Well, it's on the rise. I went out for a friend of mine's birthday.
Is that inherently bad?
I think it, but again, you're asking that as a Christian. Yes, right. As a Christian, of course, I think it's horrible because I believe the Bible is 100% true.
Can you set the Christian aside for a second and say, like, objectively for society, it's
well,
bad?
Well, you know what? It depends on what they're practicing because I believe that the practices that come with paganism are inherently bad.
Okay.
Because, well, anyway, this article, it was, the point I was making is, yes, I actually was talking to a girl who said she couldn't go anywhere without her rocks in her pockets, her stones, like these magical stones, and people who do smudge, they do sage to clear out the bad spirits and stuff. And it is an uptick in that. I'm noticing people I know who are into this stuff like that.
Have you ever seen Catholics walk around with, like, smoke and, like, their beads of prayer?
Like, I'm Protestant.
Religions are not all the same,
no,
right?
No, they're not all the same.
Yeah.
I don't want to get. We do stuff a little differently within even the Christian denomination. However, that's not relevant. That's not relevant.
Yep.
But the interesting part was they were talking about the fashion these women wore.
Okay.
And they were. And I had a teacher who was a witch. But anyway, this quote was really interesting to me. It said, "Hunt has donned her husband's grandmother's black lace dress. On the way here, I realized I want to wear," she says. "It's kind of sexy. Also, we are meeting the father." Who is the father? It's Lucifer. It says we're meeting the father and we're healing with our fathers. So she said the father. It's not like she said we're meeting our father or we're meeting past spirits. We're meeting the father.
What's the first part of the Trinity? The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Well, yeah, but they're not Christian. They're witches. They're not meeting Yahweh. They're not looking to talk to Yahweh. They're not. They're looking to meet their father.
It doesn't matter to me. I mean, either way.
You see, you don't believe.
You're meeting
I don't know what you believe. I shouldn't say that, but I mean, I don't know.
I'm a non-theist.
Definitely. You're a non-theist. Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay. I like people speak for themselves. But yes, also we're meeting the father and we're healing with our fathers and our patriarchal energy. And I thought I would want to meet him with this energy. So it is a decline. When you see a decline in, I believe, in our faith, in Christian faith, you're going to see an uptick in paganism, which coincides with our original point is the religious right, because in the paganist tradition, you can't, it's like do what thou will. You do whatever you feel like. Anything.
Oh, I disagree completely with that.
Oh, look at the cult of Dionysus, which I'm going real old school with that. But they do all kind of stuff. But, you know, I think we need to move on to our last topic.
All right, we got two
But I think
last
the religious
topics.
Right is right.
Current events that are happening right now. So the student walkout was today. Today is Wednesday for everybody that's watching live on Facebook. We appreciate you guys watching live on Facebook. That's super cool. So there was a walkout today that was organized by the students of Florida originally to protest especially gun violence in schools in the United States. And it's kind of been co-opted by a bunch of different groups, including the Women's March, which is kind of unfortunate because this whole thing started off as giving kids the voice to say what they wanted to say. And I think that's great. And unfortunately, you know, the media like CNN has co-opted this to promote their message. And now the Women's March has co-opted the Kids March to say what the Women's March wanted, when all along this was specifically designed and intended by the children to give the children a message. And I think that's good. And I disagree with the kids in this instance of, you know, we need to get rid of guns or we need to implement XYZ laws to get rid of assault weapons. I disagree with a lot of these topics. But I think it's really great that they're organizing and doing their own thing.
Yeah. And yeah, the thing about it is, it's the part I think is kind of sad. The kids don't realize that they're pawns in a bigger game.
You think that somebody's using them? And if so, who's that somebody?
Well, the organizers of the Women's March.
Okay.
They're definitely using these kids.
Yep.
I know Janine Cadiff. And by the way, if you want to make a donation to the 14th Congressional District, please do so. Thanks so much for sponsoring the program. But Janine Cadiff, our chairwoman of the 14th Congressional District Republicans, was on WJR, and she was also on Channel 7 today, her with Grant Strobel, who's the national chair, I believe, of the Young Americans for Freedom. And they were talking about how this is one-sided. And in fact, from what I understand, the Young Americans for Freedom, Grant Strobel, says that they would fund a pro-Second Amendment speaker to come to high schools, and that they will fund their that person coming as long as the school found their person who they want to speak their side, which I think is fair. And that's our thing. Our thing isn't that these kids should have a right to speak their opinion. It's that they should hear both sides.
Definitely.
They should hear both sides of the story, and they're being used as pawns in a bigger game.
But
like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And the high schools, just like the universities, are starting to suppress, or it seems like, conservative voices on campus. And that includes things like the Second Amendment. And it's a shame that I don't want to say this, but the left seems to be very oppressive with their things that they allow to say. And that comes to things like the Second Amendment, and that comes to things like religion, like we talked about earlier in the topic. But anyways, we got one last topic real quick to talk about.
I did want to point something out about that. What was really interesting is I was in one of my classes yesterday, and I teach speech. Well, it's one of the many hats that I wear. But I have this exercise where I have my students throw a topic in the middle of the table. They can't put their name on the paper so they can be comfortable to speak their mind.
Cool.
And then they pick the topic up and give a speech about it. And one of my students was talking about something. And, of course, they're being taught socialist messaging. It's like our schools have become recruiting tools for the political left. They're training up foot soldiers. But one of my students blurted out, yeah, I was talking about how a lot of times politicians don't care about the needs of the citizens because they're getting paid off. And one of my students was like, yeah, like the NRA. Mike, I wanted to explode, but it was exactly 5 p.m. and I had to leave. I wanted to go like with a Super Saiyan.
This is the propaganda. The left and the right both do it.
Well,
she just turned blonde, by the way.
But Mike, what was the last thing you
All right, last up on today's list is Pennsylvania. So there was a special election in Pennsylvania last night for the 18th Congressional District there, where Tim Murphy was leaving his seat as the representative for the district. And there was a special election held between a very moderate Democrat, his name was Lamb, and a pretty conservative pro-Trump Republican. And I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce this word because I'm a nerd and I only read things and I don't listen to things, called Saccone. Correct me if I'm wrong there on Facebook Live. And anyways, it was really tight last night when I was watching it. And when I went to bed, the race was split up by only 68 votes. And that was with hundreds of thousands of people voting. This race has since been decided. And unfortunately, the Democrat won on this, Lamb won on this, but only by 641 votes. Hmm. So the message that I want all the listeners to take away from this is your vote matters. It mm-hmm. is important. Get out there and vote every chance you get. Anyways, that's all I got to say. We got about 10 seconds left.
We're fabulous and you love us. So share our video and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Please make a donation to the 14th Congressional District. And if you are a candidate and would like to be on the show, please send us an email at writeon14th@gmail.com.
Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks.